Okay, so I wanted to try to finish up the Tefillas Kelim, and then hopefully by next time we'll work on milk and meat issues or avoiding or what problems exist in the kitchen, and that'll probably take us a little while. And then I guess we'll take it from there. So I think maybe what we'll do is we'll go through a few of the remaining issues and then try to just summarize and make sure that whatever we've done until now is fairly clear. Okay, so we've discussed a lot about the items that, again, we said at the beginning that there are three questions that you need to ask when you're trying to figure out in advance, does this item need to be toveled or not? So the first question was, what is it made out of? Which again, glass and metal need tevila, and everything else does not, but we have a lot of in-between things when you have layers, when you have glazed, and when you have new products, which fall into those in-between categories of things that we would tovel, but without a bracha. The second question was, will the utensil come into direct contact with food? Is it part of the food preparation? Is it either bringing the food to the table, or is it furthering along the, or eventually going to be, touching, edible food? So like the grates on the barbecue, when the food is on, it's rubbed. By the time it's finished, it's cooked. So it is going to be coming in direct contact with edible food, as opposed to, we said, if you have shears that you're using only for raw chicken and you don't use it ever for anything that's cooked. If you use it for both, so then that would have to be toveled. But if you use it only for raw, then it would not have to be toveled. And then the third question is, who made the utensil? Who is the ownership of the utensil? So again, tevilas kelim is not the same thing as koshering it. So we are talking even about new items. But even with new items, if they're purchased or manufactured by a non-Jew, then it requires tevila. That it has to do, in terms of making the kli, it has to do with who owns. Meaning, if you have a factory that's owned completely by Jews and the workers are not Jewish, that's considered to be a Jewish-owned kli. If you had the opposite, then the opposite would be true. If you had a non-Jewish company and all the employees were Jewish, then that would similarly go by the owners, and that would require tevilas kelim. So it has to do with who the owners are. But again, if you purchase it from a non-Jew, then it needs to be toveled, even if it is new. That's why, when we sell the chametz, and people put away their dishes, we don't sell the dishes. Because if we sold the dishes, then you'd have to tovel all your pots after Pesach. So what we sell is, if there's any chametz that's left on the dishes, that's what we're selling. And the whole thing is probably, again, with dishwashers and the cleanliness nowadays probably at a different standard than it was years ago, there probably is no chametz actually on the dishes, but we're careful. So we're putting it away anyway, but we're only selling the chametz on the dishes. If somebody decides to do the mechiras chametz themselves, then there are a lot of problems that can emerge, but among them is, if you say you're actually selling the chametz pots, then when you purchase them back at the end, because it is a real sale, you would actually have to tovel all of those pots again. So just do the standard thing with the rabbis, and it'll be fine. Because it says explicitly, if you read through the text, it says, and any chametz that's on the pots or dishes or anything like that. So, okay, so that's in terms of who made the vessel. What other issues exist? So one is a question of children toveling the items for you. So you bring the child along. So if the child isn't the child, halachically, over bar or bas mitzvah, so then certainly there's no problem at all. Again, assuming that they know what they're doing, because you can, in theory, mess the whole thing up. But again, assuming that they know that they do it properly, then there's no problem. What about a child, or similarly, a non-Jew? If you bring a housekeeper along with you, if you have a lot of stuff to tovel, can they do the tefillah? So the truth is that tefillas kelim is interesting in that it does not require any kavana. If your dishes fell into the mikveh and didn't break, and you pulled them out, then, and you didn't have in mind at the time that you were doing it for tefillas kelim, but it fell into what is a kosher mikveh, that tevila is 100% valid. So being that's the case, so then what difference does it make if a child is doing it or a non-Jew is doing it? Why is that different than the vessel falling in by itself? So it's really not. The issue is, it sounds a little funny, the issue is that a child or a non-Jew is not believed to say that they toveled the vessel. So you can't rely on them to have actually done it, even if they said that they did it. So that's the reason why you can't have them do it, but if you're present, then you can have them do it for you. Have them do it for you, because again, then you're not relying on them for belief that they did it, because you saw that it was being done, and you're there to make sure it was done properly. But you don't need to, since you're not relying on them for anything, and they're putting it in, so there's no, then there would be no problem.
You should advise the caterers in town of that.
They only send the non-Jews?
They send a Jew usually to make the bracha, and quite often they leave.
They leave? Yeah. Okay, that's good to know. I mean, it's not good to know. Or it's not good to know. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not good to know.
We can go to the videotape. Yeah, so that's to be a problem. I know, but when the first time that we made Pesach, so we bought everything new, and Michal spent a lot of time at the mikvah, and she tried to do it on the day when we had a cleaning lady in the house, but she wanted to be extra careful, so she did it. She did all the dipping, and she did all the cleaning, did all the drying and repacking. But the truth is that it would have been fine as long as you're supervising, if she actually put the things in the mikveh as well, as long as you are there. Because again, tefillas kelim does not require any special intent.
So what about the bracha part?
So you would make the bracha. You would make the bracha. So being, I guess, if you're making the bracha and it's a non-Jew, then it'd be best to do at least something. Do they do the first one or something? Or you don't watch that carefully?
I don't watch that carefully, and some of them bring a mashgiach that stays the whole time. But I've seen where they drop off and they make the bracha, and then they kind of go somewhere and then come back as stacks of dishes and cups are totaled.
Right. Again, it could be that maybe you can be leaning down that. Again, I haven't thought about it before right now. Meaning, if you come back and everything is wet, so then you can assume that he didn't. You know, there's no other source of water in that mm-hmm. room. He didn't take a spritzer and something. Yeah. So then maybe they could rely on that. That if everything is wet, then how else would it have gotten wet? But it still seems a little bit weak. Okay, I have to bring that up with the powers that be. Other issues in terms of actually being toveled. So again, if you're toveling one kli, so the bracha, again, I think it says that on the card, is al tevilas kli or keli. And if it's more than one, so it actually changes the bracha, and it's the bracha is made in the plural. Presumably, if you have something which is a suffix, you can still say the bracha in the plural. I didn't see anybody discuss that directly, but in terms of the content of the bracha, either way, I don't think it would be ma'akev anything. You can't tovel anything on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Now, the Kelim is probably not open on Shabbos or Yom Tov, so it wouldn't necessarily come up in the context of the formal mikvah. But if you're in the vacation or something like that, and you realize that something wasn't tovel, then there's a river or lake or something right there. You're in camp, and again, assuming that the lake is a viable mikvah, which we talked about last time, it has to be something that a woman could use for a mikvah as well for Tefillas Kelim. So then you cannot do it on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Why not? Because the vessel is not usable, as we said already a few times. You can't use it even once without having toveled it in the mikvah. So in a certain sense, the kli is like a broken kli, because it's not usable. So by putting it in the mikvah, you fix the kli, and you've made it into a kli on Shabbos, and that's a violation of, again, at least midrabanan, of makah bepatish, of completing the vessel, because the vessel is not functional in terms of what you want to use it for until after you do it. I guess that's a possibility. Again, do people ever like bring kelim with them when they're going to the mikvah? They do.
I mean,
it makes sense. Again, other than in cleanliness issues, there's no problem.
No, we send them to the kelim.
Oh, you do?
It's not true.
Because of cleanliness?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Okay. I've thought about it in theory before, and when I was trying to avoid or having forgotten numerous times to tovel something, I figured it would be an easy way to get it toveled. But okay. So again, in that way, in theory, it could come up on Shabbos also, I guess, if somebody was going to the mikvah on Shabbos and tried bringing it along. But okay, again, there's no tefillas kelim on Shabbos or Yom Tov. What is there any solution if you realize that it's right before Shabbos and you can't get the mikveh and you really, really, really need to use it? So the only solution would probably be the same solution that we discussed last time, if you have an electronic appliance which can't get wet, meaning not because it's electronic, but because it has some sort of computer component in it. Again, the electronic things, like the pump pots and sandwich makers and all those things, they can all be toveled, even if it says on it, do not immerse in water, and you just make sure to let it dry for a few days afterwards, and they work. For me, it's been 100% of the time, and anybody that I've advised and anybody that I've spoken to about it, I've never had anything that breaks. But when you have something like the Keurig or the Nespresso machine or those kinds of things, where if you stuck that in the mikveh, the computer would be broken, so you don't really have a good option. So the best option, I said last time, if you're really stuck, is to sell it to a non-Jew and then borrow it back. And a kli that belongs to a non-Jew, if you go to a hotel and you're going to use a glass, you don't have to tovel it even though you're using it, because you're just using it, but it belongs to somebody who's not Jewish. So in theory, that would work also. If you had sold it to a non-Jew right before Shabbos, then you could use that and borrow it. Then you could use that tray or platter or whatever it is on Shabbos. It's still worth taking it to the mikveh afterwards. Now, whether you can make a bracha or not is an interesting question. You'd probably have to buy it back in order to be able to make a bracha, because it really belongs to her as much as she might not understand that. And you have to try to explain it as best as possible. As I said, I mentioned last time that my cleaning lady owns both versions of my coffee machine.
That we can just sell it to them and then basically borrow it back permanently?
Again, that's not the best. For the Keurig, that seems to be the best solution. It doesn't seem like there's a better solution than that. I mentioned last time when I did that, I explained and our cleaning lady had already been to the mikveh before Pesach, so I said if I stick this in that water, which she assumes is some sort of holy water, then it's going to break. So I said, so I can. So I sold it to her for $10, and she goes, do I have to take it home? I said, actually, it'd be perfectly fine if you leave it right here. She said, okay, good. And so
can you do that to things that you're afraid that you're not sure will break but may be okay? Like a sandwich maker or a waffle maker or something.
They won't break. You could, but it won't break.
But can you do it? Like, can you do the selling?
You could. The selling is it's a last resort if there's no other option.
And monetary value, whatever you agree upon, doesn't matter. Like, can it be like a dollar, or does it have to be a real amount?
No, it doesn't have to be a real amount. They have to understand that it's a real sale and that you're borrowing it back. If the person is living in the house, it's probably better not to sell it to somebody who's not living in the house, if there's somebody, because then they really are, I mean, their stuff and your stuff are a little bit more intertwined. But that is, that for all those things that you can't tovel for whatever reason, that is the best solution, but it's not a great solution. So again, when you have an alternative where you can actually be tovel it, that would certainly be better. In terms of getting off the stickers and the gunk and other things of that nature, so again, the reason for it is the same thing as a woman preparing to go to the mikveh. The entire vessel has to be in the water, and all the water has to be touching it. That's why if it's a big something, you have to be careful. That's why also, again, this is something which I've seen people at the mikveh not always being careful with. When you have something that has a bottleneck on it, you have to give it enough time in the water to let the water completely fill it up.
So no
the
bubbles.
Inside also, right, so there's no more bubbles. So if you hold it down, right, then it will bubble until there's no more room, and you're going to have to dump it out afterwards. But just putting it in isn't enough. In fact, it's worse, because the one area that, again, you have to do the entire thing, but certainly, even in the cases where we're nervous and we say, maybe you can get away with just this part that touches the food, the part that's touching the food is the inside of the bottle. So that's something that, again, it just requires patience sometimes and a little bit of knowledge. That's one of the areas where if you send a child instead and don't tell them, they're probably not going to do that. They're probably just going to stick it in, a little bit of water is going to get in, and then they'll head back and be done with it. And that would be a problem. So again, but it's all the same concept, that the entire vessel has to be in the mikveh at one time with all the water touching it. So again, if you have a sticker or you have the gunk of the sticker left, so that in theory is a chatzitza. Now there are times where you want the sticker to be there. It's a fancy name brand something, and you care about other people seeing that. So if that has value to you, and you're buying it, or you want it because of the name on it, and you would want it to be there, you certainly don't have to remove it. It's only something which is supposed to be removed that has to be removed. I forgot what somebody once asked me about.
Wait, what do you mean by that? You don't have to remove?
I'm just saying, I think it was something. I think it was like a fancy glass something. What's the glass in it? Murano glass? Is that Italy or somewhere?
Yeah, that's in Italy.
So this person wanted, I guess that people should know it's not a fake, wanted it to still say on it, Murano glass. I wanted to have to take it off. So I said, if you want it to be there, of course you don't have to take it off. That's like part of the the vessel, so you can leave it. If you're not planning on it coming off, or it's not going to fall off on its own, if it's going to fall off anyway, then you probably have to take it off, because you can't view it as part of the vessel. But if you're planning on leaving it there and you want it to be there, so why should you have to take it off? So you can leave it on. But if it's a label that, you know, just says the barcode on it or a description of it, so that should come off, because that you're planning on taking off, and that would be a chatzitza. The stuff which is left behind it, if you care about the gunk being there, meaning before you would serve on it, you're going to goo gun it and scrape it and do all the other tricks to try to get it off, so that should also come off before you tovel it. Because again, wherever that's sticking onto the vessel, water is not going to be able to get there. If you toveled it already and then came home and then discovered these stickers, so then it depends. If it's only on a little bit and you don't really care so much, you probably don't have to tovel it again. If you want to tovel it again, you certainly should not make a bracha.
If you're willing to serve with that little sticker on,
right, your right. If it wouldn't be that embarrassing to, if it's on the bottom and it doesn't, you would take it off if you realize, but if it's not, then you would leave it there. So again, it should come off, but if you already tovel it, you certainly can use it. If you want to tovel it again, definitely do not make a bracha. Okay, so what about the disposable pans? The what are they called? The 9x13s. Do those need to be toveled or not? So you tell me, based on what we learned, why not? Why would you not have to tovel that based on what?
What if you cover it with parchment?
Let's figure out the solutions afterwards. Again, but just take the actual tin.
So the material doesn't.
The material does. It's metal. Aluminum, we assume, is metal. Aluminum, we assume, is metal.
It comes in direct contact
with the food, and you're buying it. At some point, it came from a non-Jew. Ladies in the back who are trying not to hear this, listen. Again, if you just look at the three questions, in terms of the material, it's metal. Aluminum, we assume, is metal. It's a flimsier aluminum. Well, right? In terms of touching the food, it normally comes into direct contact with the food. And at some point, it was manufactured or owned by a non-Jew. So again, when you're just looking at it, the simple answer should be that it requires tevila. So then the question is, so why may it not? Why would we think that it wouldn't require tevila?
Snapple bottle.
So maybe like the Snapple bottle. Now it's a little worse than the Snapple bottle. Again, the theory.
It's not real metal, and you could throw it out. You can mush it.
Okay.
It's flimsier metal.
Yeah. It's flimsier metal. We didn't talk about the strength of the.
The strength
of the metal. We didn't discuss. I don't know. Yeah. Sometimes you have these really delicate things that are very. A crystal glass. I've broken numerous ones while toveling them. They're obviously very, very, I don't know if flimsy is the right word, but it's certainly, they're fragile, but everybody agrees that those need, that those have to be toveled. So the question is, why would they not? Because again, other than a common practice, if you're just understanding the halachos involved, why would it not require tevila? It certainly should require it. So we discussed a little bit the Snapple bottles last time, but the Snapple bottles are a little bit, in one sense, better, and in another sense, worse. They're a little bit better because the food was already placed in it. You're not putting the food inside the Snapple bottle. You buy the Snapple bottle. Again, the issue being that it's a glass bottle, which should require tevilas kelim, but you are going to be drinking from it, and it didn't have the tevila. Now, obviously, you can't really tovel it at that point because there's Snapple inside of it. So you're a little bit stuck. So the question that we mentioned a little bit last time is, so what do you do with it? So I said, I mentioned that I've heard from Rav Schechter. He thinks you just have to pour it out. You can't drink directly from the Snapple bottle. You should pour it into a cup, and then the bottle is, in theory, disposable, though the Snapple bottle is not at all flimsy. If you wanted to, you could certainly use it afterwards. Others assume that because it's meant to be thrown out, and you're just, you know, drinking it as another form of emptying out, so you're using it and then you're just throwing it out. Others say that the reason that it's okay is because you don't even care about the bottle. All you care about is the Snapple. If it was up to you, you wouldn't even buy the bottle. I mean, you just care for what's inside the bottle. So that which is on the outside is almost like the peel of an orange. You know, you don't care about the peel. You care about the fruit. It happens to you. You need something to hold it or to protect it, and that has to be there. So again, what's worse about the Snapple is that the Snapple is not flimsy at all.
That's the same thing. You don't care about the aluminum pan. You're not going to save it after.
Right. So that part maybe we can transfer over. So the fact that it's disposable, so should that help or not? So maybe yes. Maybe the fact that it's disposable, meaning the nature of the metal kalim that the Torah was talking about, is things that are going to last. If you're just going to use it one time and throw it out, then obviously it's a much weaker form of a vessel. So let's pretend for a moment, let's assume that works, and that's going to work, and that as if you're going to just throw it out afterwards. So it's not really a kli, something which is disposable. We don't even define as a vessel. So then, what about reusing it?
So let's say no.
If you reuse it, then is it now considered to be a vessel? Meaning. And then if you're going to say they're reusing it, it's still disposable because I'm going to use it 3 or 4 times, then I'm going to throw it. So where do you draw the line? And if I'm going to use it 6 or 7 times, I'm not going to cook in it. I'm going to put cookies after they're baked in it, and we'll go in the freezer, and then I'll replenish it. So it's not really, you know, cooking it gets kind of gross after a while. But if you're just putting, you know, cookies inside of it, it's not really... you know, getting gross or anything like that. It's not really getting any weaker. You could probably use it 12 times and nothing would happen to it. So where would you draw the line and say that it's not considered to be a permanent vessel anymore? So those are really the issues. So to me, what makes sense, this is the practice in my house, is that for one time use, we do not tovel the 9x13, the aluminum pan. As long as we're using them as disposable, and after we use them, they get thrown out. It doesn't require tevilas kalim, but it would require tevilas kalim to be reused, which means that we throw them out. We don't tovel them, but we actually once needed to borrow from somebody else. It was very late, probably on a Thursday night or an Erev Yontif or something like that. And Michal called a friend, and I went over to pick them up. And they do tovel their tins. So we're debating when we give them back. Should we go and tovel them for them? We feel bad giving them back ones that they're going to have to go to. But I think the practice of most people is not to tovel them. But reusing them seems to be much more difficult. Why should it be that you could, you know, reuse it? At that point, how is it different than the permanent vessels? Because you can use it only 3 times.
Do you mean reuse it like if you have?
So that's a good question. At what point is the use over? Right.
Like if you only eat half of it and you buy it.
Right. Or you take the chicken out of it and then you're gonna put it back in.
Right.
So in my mind, and again, I don't have any proofs that this is the thing. As long as you're still using it for the same thing, then I think that's still one use. So if you're gonna take half of the, you put schnitzel in there or something like that, and then you serve it, goes out the table Friday night, half of it's still in the tin, and you're gonna put the remaining back inside the tin with it. So to me, that's the same. That's still the same use. But once it's empty of the schnitzel, and now you're gonna throw the leftover potato kugel inside of it, that's a little bit harder for me to. Certainly, if you're gonna wash it or put it in the dishwasher, or scrub it. I've seen all these things done, so I know that it happens. Then besides the fact that, you know, it's going to get mixed up and somebody's going to use the fleshik one for the milchik and things like that, because they're very generic, I don't know. To me, it's harder to say that you can do it in that case. Is there any justification? So there may be a justification. The logic would go like this, that when the company makes it, they intend for it to be disposable. They make it flimsy, and they're assuming, and they want you to throw it out because they want you to buy more. So they make these pans that I think even says on the disposable. If you buy not the Amazing Saving ones, I don't say anything on them, but if you buy the Costco pack with the thing inside, I think it says on it disposable, half change, something. So they want it to be, and they make it, they intend for it to be disposable. So if you assume that it is disposable, B, that that it's not considered to be a vessel if it's disposable, therefore you'll use it one time. So then you can maybe say that if you decide to use it for longer, you're the one who's turning it into a permanent vessel. And then it's made by a Jew. And if it's made by a Jew, it doesn't require tefillas kelim. You could say this, right, you could say a similar idea by reusing the Snapple bottle. That nobody would the company assumes you're going to throw the Snapple bottle out. I think that's common practice as well, or recycle it, whatever you do with glass bottles. And if you decide to use it afterwards or something else, you're the one who's turning it into a permanent vessel. So if you're the one who's creating it, then what's the difference if you create it through your intent or if you build it with your hands? I don't know. It's not the most compelling argument in the world to me. Again, when you're stuck in a situation, maybe I can understand where that's coming from. But it seems I don't know. It seems a little bit far-fetched in terms of assuming that that's the way that it's going to work. Especially if they're made to be strong, so maybe we don't care what the company thinks about it. The fact that they write disposable on it, if the normal use, I don't know what the normal use is. I don't know if anybody knows. Is the normal use to use it multiple times and clean it in between?
A tan?
Yeah. No. I don't know. Right, but most times, it's normal, I think, to put the stuff back in, but not to sit there scrubbing out not to put more effort than the thing is worth.
Right. Then you would use a glass one or a
Pyrex. Exactly.
One.
Exactly.
The point is to not wash.
Right. So that I think is to me that's the solution that makes the most sense. Again, that's what we do in our house. Again, for one-time use, we do not tovel them. And again, I think the use. I had a question. My brother-in-law, he likes to, make sure that I'm consistent with what I say. So he was over for Yontif, and for Yontif, Michal made round challahs inside a circle tin. So I took out the challah, and our silver has yet to be unpacked from the move for various reasons. So we didn't have a normal challah dish thing. So I cut the challah and I put the challah to put it into the decent looking tin. He goes, "You're using it for a second use." So I said, I know, I think it's a, so I said it was a, I thought it was a continuation of the first. In deference to him, I didn't do it the rest of Yontif, but I didn't think, I'm not sure that he's right. Meaning, is that different than putting the chicken back in the kitchen? He's saying it's different because once you take it out, even though you're using it for the same item, you're using it for a different purpose. I understand where he was coming from.
So that's where the one-time use came from.
Yes and no.
Right.
Yes and no, except that the one-time use, I think, existed before disposable kelim. So I'm not sure. I don't know where the one-time use came from. I mean, I guess that would be a way of solving the Erev Shabbos problem. If you have a beautiful platter, and you didn't have a chance to bring it to the mikveh, if you decide that it's disposable, and you throw it out when you're... I don't think that would really work. No, if you cover it, so I think we mentioned one time that if that's the way that it's normally and always used, then that should help. Meaning the example I think we gave, if always is going to be parchment paper, none of the food is touching you might have to parchment paper up the sides also.
What do you mean by always? Like if you have a cookie sheet, which you will always use.
Whenever you use a tin, is that the way that the tin is used? If that's not the way that the tin is used, then...
So then
I think they have to be all the time. So like the example that I think we gave was if you have the pitcher in Israel that holds the bag of milk. So that's designed to hold the bag. It's not designed to pour the milk inside of it and to. It's meant that the food should never actually touch the vessel. Somebody who would take the milk out and pour it into the thing is using it in a weird way, meaning maybe for a specific reason they're doing it. That's not the normal. That's not the normal usage. So that would not require tevilas kelim, because the normal way of using it and what it's designed for is to not touch the food directly. But sometimes, I don't know, I think it depends on what you're making, whether you line it or not. I think, in my house, it seems to be depending on...
Let's say you use an aluminum foil pan and you put parchment paper in it. Can you then reuse it again with another piece of parchment paper?
Right, because it's not...
No, but I don't...
Right.
Again, I think the parchment paper would only help if the tin is always used that way. If you're just...
specific tin or tin
No,
in
I mean, tin, I think tins in general. Meaning if it depends on what you're making. If you're going to make... if you're going to make lasagna, you probably don't put parchment paper in. Is that correct? I think that's right.
Yeah.
You do?
No,
for me, I would.
You would.
You do?
If you would, if you would always, because you don't want this. right. That's what they say.
Right.
You just shouldn't use them, probably.
Right. No, that's how,
too.
Why? Is parchment paper not porous?
Parchment paper is just better. It doesn't leach the aluminum into the food if it's tomato.
I'm sure there's something else that comes out of that parchment paper that's carcinogenic. There's something in everything. You'd have to live life and be careful. But again, if you would never ever put food directly touching the tin, then maybe you could use the tins for longer without toveling them. Because then, at least for you, the tins are designed that way. And I don't think that would be considered to be weird. Because I think everybody, for some things, you put parchment paper in or aluminum foil. I guess how would you put aluminum foil in? I don't know. Something inside. But if it's not the normal, if that can't be defined as the normal way of using it, then I don't think that would help. But something like that, if you would make it in there, you wouldn't want to use it again.
Right.
So I think it's a little bit of a non-issue. It would help if you really think that they should be toveled even for one-time use, then a different way out of it.
Cookies, that would be the only time that I have done. If you're making,
but not
cookies,
for making cookies, it's for putting cookies in after they're made.
No, but I'm saying, like, let's say you make the Quinara cookies, you put on parchment paper and aluminum foil pan, you make one batch, you take it out, you switch the parchment paper, put it on the same aluminum foil pan, put it in again, and use it like three times.
So why don't you just use your cookies?
I'm just saying.
In theory, in that case, it sounds like between being one use and the parchment paper, I wouldn't be worried about it in that case. I think that would be fine. I think that would be okay.
What about the pans like at Cedar Market? I've seen like they have Hebrew in them. Are they considered like Jewish owned?
So I don't know if they say on it, if they have a hechsher that says they don't require tevila. So then it doesn't. I wonder why it doesn't require tevila. I'm curious.
Maybe it's made by a Jewish person in Israel.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And do they cost like four times as much?
No, they're good.
So then it's very hard to imagine that they're made by a Jew in Israel. It doesn't cost more than the ones coming from China. If it says on it, there's a hashgacha that says, again, when a company writes on it that it doesn't need tevila, I'm not convinced that it doesn't need tevila. Because where's that coming from? You need somebody who knows what they're talking about to be able to say that. But if it has some sort of hechsher in it, and it says it doesn't require tevila, then you could use it multiple times without toveling it. It could be that it says on it, it doesn't require tevila for one-time use. I don't know, I've never... I have seen things with Hebrew on them, I never bothered reading it. So maybe next time if we get those, I'll take a look at what it says on it. But I assume that it's some sort of hechsher that it doesn't require, in which case that would work. The same way, now a lot of the pump pots have some sort of hechsher on them. So if it has on it that it doesn't require tevila, and it seems to be for a legitimate reason, so then you don't have to worry about toveling it, even though it won't break if you do tovel it. But there's no reason to tovel it if it doesn't require it.
Aren't those all from Jewish companies? I mean, if you've thrown out the box and just hypothetically you have one in your house that you did not tovel, then what do you do now? Like from Glad Express, aren't those companies...
If you look it up in the company... I don't think all of them. I mean, you can buy them on Amazon. I don't know it could be the ones they sell in the Jewish stores.
Are from Shabbos on it.
If it says Shabbos on it, you could probably assume it's from a Jewish company. But right. If it says Shabbos on it, then presumably it's from a Jewish company. But I don't know, somebody else might have chopped on that. If you write Shabbos on it, all the Jews are going to buy it, and who else buys those?
No, but like you said, it could be manufactured in China.
It could be, but if it was Jewish owned, if the company is Jewish owned, it would be okay, even if the employees are not Jewish. So that could still help. Okay, again, the other important, I don't know if I mentioned this before, and is that if one ended up using a something which required tefillas kelim, and realized afterwards that it wasn't tovel, it has no effect on the food. The food is 100% doesn't make the food treif, not kosher.
And when you tovel it, do you still make a bracha?
Yes, because it absolutely requires it too. It doesn't change anything about
it.
Yes. You have to maybe clean it off a little more.
So it doesn't have, like if you're eating at someone's house and the stuff hasn't been toveled.
And you know for sure it hasn't been toveled?
That
is bad.
It's a big problem.
Somebody that you...
It's a big problem that the poskim try to figure out a solution to. The solutions aren't great. Rav Moshe says that you can, let's talk about it here. Rav Moshe says that you can.
How would you know? Because you know they're not that right.
If you know that friend of yours that's like, I don't do the tovelin thing, Can you eat there?
But she bought all her food takeout from Adam. Uh-huh. So you know she's got kosher food, but let's say the dishes are not.
Yeah.
Is it the same level as.
No, it's not like eating not kosher food.
No, is it the same level as eating by somebody that you know that they're not turning on their stove? Is that the same type of thing?
Like Bishul Akum? No, so Bishul Akum
is worse.
Bishul Akum is worse because Bishul Akum actually makes the food not kosher.
Yeah.
And it makes the kelim not kosher also. Bishul Akum, I think, in like our society, is the biggest potential problem in food at other people's homes. Because if you don't know what you're doing with it, you can really have a problem. It's a machlokas between the Mechaber of the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, whether it forbids the kelim or not, and the Ramah is machmir, and that's the minhag Ashkenaz is to be machmir, and you would actually have to kasher, not tovel, no kasher with either the hagala or with libun, with whatever, depending on what it was, a vessel which was used in a case where there's a violation of Bishul Akum. Again, not everything which is cooked by a non-Jew is necessarily Bishul Akum. There are many rules. Maybe we can get to that later. If again, let's say you're going to people who aren't from, you know, they're Jewish and you know that they didn't tovel their vessels, so it's a problem. If you can somehow get away with eating only on plastic, that's.
Yeah, but you said most China you don't need to.
China you do not need to.
So okay.
Right. That's
right. Let's say they serve on their China.
Right.
They cooked with serving.
Oh, they didn't cook. Let's say they didn't cook. Okay.
Right. Those are the best. The best, if you can, solution which seems to be more reasonable in terms of being able to do it is to eat only solid food and not liquid food. What's the difference? The enthusiast motion said something fascinating. He said, if you think about it, again, you have to be objective here. You have to think about it. If you think about it, you don't really need a plate to eat solid food. Right? It's more polite, it avoids the mess. But if the food was placed on the table, you could eat the food. A liquid's not like that. A liquid would spill over the place. There's no way to eat a soup without a bowl. So there, the soup is integral to the food because you can't possibly eat the food without the vessel. When it comes to a plate, so then you can at least say that, okay, in this kind of difficult situation, I'm not so concerned about the plate because I don't really need the plate. I'm not really benefiting from the fact that the plate is there because I could just eat it off of the table directly. Other than that, what do you say here? One who finds himself in a particular dilemma should consult a competent halachic authority. Okay, so if it comes up, find a competent halachic authority and you can discuss it. But again, that seems to be the best solution, if it's possible, is to eat food which doesn't really require the plate. Any other last tefillas kelim questions?
What if you're not sure if you told about something, like you think you did, you left it out?
Yeah, so not sure is our way. If you're really not sure, it's like, you know, we call it a 50-50, then you tovel it again without a bracha. if it's, you know, not sure, but I'm 90% sure that I did, so you have to figure out why you have that 10% that you don't. Whatever people call them with percentages, I try to figure out, like, where do they make that up from? And what makes you 90% convinced versus 60% convinced? Again, if there's no reason, then they're just like, well, I'm just not sure. I don't know if you're just, like, out of nowhere, sudden, like, I don't remember doing it, but you have no reason, but you always tovel your... So why would you assume that you didn't tovel this item if you know you always tovel everything before? And if you have, you know, a particular, you know, something nagging at you, so then that would probably make it 50-50. And if it's 50-50, then you should tovel it without a bracha.
If you buy something new and tovel that with a bracha, then...
Right, then you can, then you can hop onto that, that bracha. Just a brief thought about the... So Amir Tashem, next time we'll get to the actual kitchen. And we could do Bishul Akum. You'd rather do Bishul Akum than... Yeah.
Then what?
Then I will try to do everything over the course of the year or so. Otherwise, I was going to just start with milk and meat and mixtures and things, and they accidentally fall into each other. And, you know, if the milk falls into your chicken soup... Are you really going to be able to serve that? And those kinds of questions. Any preference? Bishul Akum.
Yeah.
So unless I decide that Bishul Akum is too much for me to prepare by next week, then we'll do Bishul Akum. Just in general. Okay, then I won't prepare. Okay. fine. So Bli Nether, we'll continue with Bishul Akum. So at the beginning of the parasha, this scene is very famous about Avram sitting at his tent, and Hashem makes it so hot so that no guests are going to come. Again, Rashi describes that he took the sun out of its covering to make it extra hot so that nobody would come, and Avram's sitting there, wants the guests. And it certainly teaches us the extent to which Hachnasas Orchim is a, you know, important Jewish value. But it makes you wonder, how did Rashi know it all? Not in general, like, how is he going to know it all? But, you know, how did Rashi know that all these details are true? It just says it was hot. He was looking outside for a guest. But Rashi seems to be trying to almost expand the story and just make it into a really, really, you know, even bigger deal, that it's on the third day of his bris milah and he's in the most pain. And the whole situation is just, you know, it magnifies the hachnasas orchim of Avram. So Rav Volpe says something which, again, is an important idea to keep in mind when approaching Chumash, and in particular, I think, when it comes to the, for lack of a better term, we'll call them the story parshios, you know, that we're in the next few weeks, is that the Torah doesn't just tell us stories. It's not a storybook. And if the Torah is going ahead and providing details in a story, there's a lot in those details, because if the details weren't that significant, it was just the general value of Hachnasas Orchim, so it doesn't need to tell us that how hot it was and assume that he was in pain. But the Torah is going through and telling us the story. It has to be that it's trying to teach us something, and even more than what it meets on the surface. And again, it's an approach, I think, in general, to the story. You see it in Chazal. The truth is, often when Chazal, like by Esav HaRasha, so it's described, it says he's a Rasha, and then Chazal laid on him. More than just what the Torah says that he did wrong, he did this, and he did that, and he did that. And the opposite is true also. When it comes to the people who are tzaddikim and have positive qualities, so in the opposite direction, Chazal make them into even these greater people. And it's one common thread that goes between an understanding or an appreciation or an approach to how the Torah deals with these stories. That when the Torah is telling us these things, we have to understand that it's not... Again, it's lessons that, you know, you and me can learn from. But it's not stories about just another person. And that the greatness of these people is something which we can't... You know, when the Torah says that Avram and Sarah, the Ramban accuses last week's parasha, Sarah, Avram of sinning in the whole plot with Sarah going down to Egypt. And this week's parasha, he assumes that Sarah did something wrong. She denies that she left. Forget for... No apparent reason, other than, I guess, being intimidated by her husband. But again, Avram seems like a nice guy. He's 100 years old. I mean, he's not... So when they take them to task for those things, it's on their level. And again, part of this this approach that he says, and part of what Chazal are highlighting, is that we have to, you know, we want to learn from the stories, but we also have to realize that there's so much more to them. And again, it doesn't make it further from us. It doesn't mean that it's harder to learn from. It just means that those values are values that, again, on their level, are maybe magnified, and we have to take from it on our level. Again, if Avram is criticized for, again, even in a case where maybe his life was on the line of not being 100% honest, so that, you know, in terms of our appreciation, we have to, you know, refocus on maybe even more basic issues of how we relate and honesty and being careful in how we speak. So he says that's what the Torah is highlighting, right? That he says kol davar ha-masupar ba-Torah, any story that's told in the Torah, einu mikri. It's not happenstance. It didn't just happen. But because it says davar mikri, there are plenty of stories that happen. There are plenty of other visitors and plenty of other scenes and times that Avram and Sarah are having guests, and there are plenty of stories that happen in their lives that don't appear in the Torah. The ones that appear in the Torah have to be. They want us to delve into them, to appreciate and to learn as much as possible from all of those stories. Okay, thank you, and Mr. Shama, continue next week.
Thank you.